Hey everybody, so two quick things before I start this episode on Brazilian SF. One, we just announced a really important thing on the blog, which is we are hosting a live episode to celebrate our 200th proper episode. That's going to be on Monday. Right now it's at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It'll be on Google Plus, and at least we're hosting it there, and it'll be streamed through YouTube, barring disaster. We'll post another link on our blog when we basically are about to start, and we will do the same thing on Twitter, so do look for that. Basically, just be prepared. There's going to be a trivia game. It's going to be kind of just a real fun experience for us, as many of us is going to be there. So the other thing is obviously going to be about the World SF Tour fundraiser. A couple quick things that have changed. One is that the individual who had offered a hotel had to back out. It happens, this life. So that's going to change the funding goal somewhat. However, I wasn't expecting this, but it may be that I get a pretty sizable sum for taxes. We will see, because hopefully they'll approve it. So hopefully that'll mitigate some of that. But in any case, right now we've just hit the fourth milestone, and we've got a lot more to go. So do please support the fundraiser. It'll send us to Worldcon. We'll have a lot of really cool stuff to do there. And it's just be really great. So I'm going to shut up now and let you guys get to the episode. Thanks for all the support so far. Thank you for listening, and enjoy.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Switch off.
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skimmy Fanny Show, episode 198. I'm Sean.
I'm Julia.
And we have four special guests today. We have Jacques Barcia. Hello.
Hi, guys.
All right, would you say a little bit about yourself?
I'm a journalist and a technology consultant at a local science cluster, a science park here in Recife, Brazil. And I'm a speculative fiction writer. Or weird fiction writer, or whatever.
Excellent. And then we have Cesar Alcazar. Hello.
Hello.
Say a little bit about yourself.
I'm a sword and sorcery and adventure writer. I also have a small publishing company called Argonauts Press. And sometimes I do a little translation work.
Oh. Excellent, excellent. And our other guest, one of the two other guests, we have Libby Jinway. Hello.
Hello. Libby Jinway. I teach Spanish and Portuguese at the University of Florida, mostly Portuguese and Brazilian literature. And I have a book called Brazilian Science Fiction, and I've edited one called Latin American Science Fiction Theory and Practice, which is more essays that I edited. And I specialize in science fiction in Latin America and mostly Brazil.
Awesome, awesome. And then lastly, we have Fabio Fernandez. Hello.
Hi. Well, I am also a writer mostly. I'm also a teacher, but I teach script writing for games and for movies. And in a university in São Paulo, Brazil. And currently I'm writing mostly in English, though I have written in Portuguese for almost 25 years now. I have two Brazilian science fiction awards called Argos, two Argos awards. And last year I co-edited with Jibril Al-Ayad, editor of the Future Fire magazine, an anthology of post-colonialist science fiction called We See a Different Frontier, which I'm very glad to say it's having very good praise in Anglo-American circles. And I have a few short stories published so far in English.
Excellent, excellent. So I thought we would start our discussion of Brazilian SF by actually beginning with the history, because I suspect most folks don't know much. I mean, you guys do, but most folks probably don't know much about the history of Brazilian science fiction. And I thought we would start with you, Libby, as somebody who has actually written an academic book on this particular subject. If you could sort of tell us a little bit about maybe the history of how science fiction emerges in Brazil, and then see, and others will kind of let you jump in on this in your own takes.
Sure. Well, like in a lot of Latin America, it really started in the 19th century, and there's a book by Rachel Haywood Fajeda called The Emergence of Latin American Science Fiction that sort of documents some of those early works of the dystopian sort of Vernian, a lot of influence of Flammarion and those kind of ideal worlds. And in the 1920s, there's more sort of utopian fiction, very heavily influenced by eugenic ideas. There's a famous one called The Black President by Monteiro Lobato, perhaps, which is probably of most interest to American audiences. I'm publishing an article on that in an anthology called Black and Brown Planets, and it's quite controversial. In the 40s, someone can help me out. Maybe we have Colonia Celia and works that are sort of more idealistic about the future in Brazil. And then in the late 50s, I think we start to see the sort of the Brazilian kind of golden age science fiction, more influenced by Ray Bradbury. We have, you know, sort of that 1960s push by a publisher called Gumercindo Rocha Doria. And this is my own take on science fiction. Not everybody in Brazil agrees with me, but because of the military dictatorship, there's a lot of dystopian fiction that comes out in the 1970s, mostly very allegorical. Even the famous songwriter Chico Buarque published one because of censorship in music, so he turned to fiction. And then in the 80s, we really see the first sort of homegrown generation of science fiction writers. And then, you know, it's just sort of snowballed ever since. I think Jacques represents like the latest generation. And Fabio, I don't know if you go with the first wave from the 60s, the second wave from the 80s, and then the third wave. I don't know if you consider yourself sort of a second wave person or someone who rides the cusp, but that's sort of how some people see it. So feel free to jump in. Jacques, Fabio?
Fabio put his hand up, so why don't you go, Fabio, and we'll jump to Jacques.
Oh, okay. Taking from Libby, I consider myself representative from the second wave because I started writing in 1987. So though I never published anything by in Gumercindo Rocha Doria, he was a friend of mine. He's still alive, but he's very old and very, very ill, you know, as you speak. But we were fast friends, and he's he was very, very important for the science Brazilian Science Fiction Readers Club, the CLFC. Most of the writers from the second wave were members at one point or another. I left the club in 2000, but I'm still friends with many of its members. But I tend to agree basically with everything that Libby just said. We didn't have a constant production of science fiction and fantasy, for that matter, until the late 60s with writers like André Carneiro. Mm-hmm. And then in the late 80s with the CLFC and some fanzines like Somnium and Megalon, we started to snowball. And this process, fortunately for us, never ended. Now we are right in the middle for in a third wave, and I think we are starting to see the rising of a fourth generation. I don't know if Caesar or Jax agree with me. If anyone wants to jump in,
well, why don't we jump to you, Jack? Because Libby had pointed to you specifically, and then Caesar will go to you. But Jack,
well, I never consider myself a part of any kind of wave or generation, specific wave or generation, because so many people from the so-called second wave, like Fabio, if he says he's second wave, are still active, and so many people from the so-called third or fourth wave, I don't know, they are not that active. I really don't know. I don't see things as waves or generations. Things are these are authors start producing and stop and continue, and you know, this, it's so dynamic that I can't really see things as a matters of generation or waves. If I could call a wave or talk about a wave or generation, I think this the current generation, the current wave of Brazilian authors, and there are many, many authors, good authors, there's many crappy authors too, but lots of many authors. And I think they're, you know, by the numbers and the quality, I think they surpass what happened in the past. But at least that's my opinion. I'm very optimistic right now. I was not in, like, 2 years ago when me and Fabio had similar conversations and participated in other podcasts. We were not that optimistic, but I think now we have some really, really awesome writers working in Brazil.
Excellent. What about you, Caesar?
Well, like Jacques, I don't consider myself part of any wave. I believe I would be part of the third wave, right? But I don't feel connected to the guys who I believe are the main authors of the third waves. Who would they be? Eduardo Spohr and Dracon? Am I right? No?
No. No, Bobby says no.
Are they the fourth wave?
I would say so.
I don't know.
Probably.
Probably fourth wave. So, if I... if because of my age and time, I believe I would be part of this fourth wave, but I don't feel a connection with my... at least with these authors. Like Jacques said, there are many great authors, but the guys who are relevant to the market, the guys who are bestsellers, I don't know, I don't feel a connection with them.
I don't think anybody feels a connection with the bestsellers. But that's not only me.
Well, I mean, since two of you have brought this idea up, since Fabi, you're the first to jump in, why do you think it is what specifically is it about these particular maybe best-selling authors that leads to that disconnection? I mean, why not a feeling of connection?
I think for me, Sean, that happens because one thing is for sure. I happen to know personally one of them, not Spohr, but André Vianco. He was practically the first one to the first very first fantasy best-selling author in Brazil. And I happen to like very much his books. I think he's a very good author. But first of all, he is disconnected from the not only from the official fandom, but from any manifestation of contacts with fans, unless they are his own readers. I don't think it's a bad idea. It's a bad thing to a bad move, but. That calls for disconnection. I don't feel connected with him except in the very few occasions where I can meet him for a coffee, for instance. And that said, I think he was the front runner of a very select group, or of three or four of, let's be optimistic, half a dozen fantasy writers. Most fantasy there are. Right now, there are no science fiction best-selling authors in Brazil, only fantasy. Most epic fantasy, or maybe urban fantasy, but none whatsoever related to science fiction. And André Vianco, his biography is very interesting because he started writing whatever came to his mind. But a couple of years later, 3 or 4 years later, the other authors seemed to already be following a trend. So for us, it's a very complicated thing because it seems to us they are just following a trend. Oh, okay, what does the market want? Oh, so let's do this. This is the thing we are discussing still today. They are not officially. This thing, this wave and generation, it's a thing for academia. I think Libby writes about it. Sometimes I write a paper about this waves. I don't usually write about Brazilian science fiction, but when I mention writers of Brazilian science fiction, I usually used to label them just for just to facilitate things, just to make things easy. But I don't think these best-selling authors are really interested in being labeled as well. But that said, I don't think that hurts anyone. Just they are not connected with the rest of the authors. It's like us and them. We're not enemies, but let's say we're not friends as well.
Okay, fair enough. Jacques, you had put your hand up a little bit ago. What did you want to add to this?
Yeah, there's another thing about a Brazilian speculative fiction today. That's the rise of some publishing houses specializing in genre fiction. I think 2 or 3 years ago, there were only about two publishing houses that, you know, worked in the market and published some anthologies, mostly anthologies, some classic science fiction. But now I think we have like 4 or 5, Cesar probably can talk a little bit more about this. And they're publishing not just American and British authors, but lots of Brazilian authors, and not just anthologies. There are already some novels from Brazilian writers, and you know, that may sound a little, you know, surprising for non-Brazilians, but there aren't many genre novels in Brazil written by Brazilians. We worked mostly with anthologies in the past decade maybe, but not many novels. And that thing is changing now. But I think Cesar can talk a little bit more about this.
Cesar?
Well, one of the organizers of which may be the biggest convention of science fiction fantasy in Brazil, that is called the Odyssey of Fantastic Literature. And this year we'll have about 19 publishers selling books here. And most of them works with fantasy and science fiction. It's a new phenomenon, like Chuck said. I am the owner of one of these publishing houses. I started in 2010 with my associate, Duda Falcão, who is also a writer. It's a very, very small publishing company. The whole company is actually just two guys struggling to release two or three books a year. And we work exclusively with horror, fantasy, and science fiction. We are part of the market, but of course we can compete with the majors. But I think this this market of small publishing houses is growing. And I believe many of them have some respect in the market, respect from the readers and our fellow authors.
I think that's right. I mean, I have the Anuário Brasileiro de Literatura Fantástica, which is like the, the Brazilian yearbook. And you just see an incredible boom starting in 2010. Whereas, you know, in 2005, maybe you saw, 40 titles. Now you're seeing 400. And so there's a niche market, I think, that people have been able to capture. And to what do you attribute this? I mean, is it a Lord of the Rings phenomenon? Is it that kind of acceptance of, Harry Potter and curious new readers? Is it, a new class of people who have risen socially who are interested in reading? Do you guys have any theories? These are just things I'm throwing out.
That's an interesting question. Did anyone in particular want to jump in on that one?
I don't know. I can't really say what thing exactly caused this boom. In recent years, the Game of Thrones phenomenon got really took Brazilian readers really strongly. But it's too recent. I think that there was something happening even before that made things happen. I really don't know. I couldn't say. What I know is that I've been writing and publishing here in Brazil and the U.S. since, 2009, 2010, and discussing a lot with people. Because in Brazil, there was a time when Brazilian readers only were fixed in these old authors like Ray Bradbury, Asimov, PKD. Not that they are they're not good. They're excellent. They're awesome. But people only read them. Obviously, because them were available to the readership, and me and Fabio and many other people, we were trying to push things, show people that there were other things and people could write about other things, not just science fiction and not that specific kind of science fiction, and maybe that worked. Maybe not. Maybe probably there was several things that happened all at once that made things happen the way they are now.
Cesar?
Well, in addition to what Chuck said, there is a huge gap in the Brazilian market of speculative fiction. We kind of jumped from Tolkien to George R. R. Martin. Authors like Michael Moorcock or Fritz Leiber and Carl Edward Wagner had a difficult time to get in here during the 60s, 70s, and 80s. I believe the movies like Lord of the Rings and more recently Game of Thrones, helped to rescue these authors. And now people here, I believe, before our time, you had to read in English to get a more, a better look of the international scene. Now we have more access to these authors, and I believe that inspires a lot too.
Fabio?
I just want to add one thing. I totally agree with Jack and Caesar, and wanted to add that fantasy apparently is a timeless phenomenon, because since the screening of Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones, other fantasy authors have been published in Brazil as well, as Joe Abercrombie and Brandon Sanderson. It's beginning to be published in Brazil as well. But you don't see the same thing happening with science fiction. Okay, there's not lots of great adaptations of movies right now, but I would like to quote Nick Mamatas as something he told, I think, on Twitter or his blog when the film Avatar came on. He was reviewing that movie and said, okay, Avatar is a crappy movie, and science fiction in movies is, quoting him, he's far more pessimistic than I am. He said that science fiction in movies is 50 years, 5 decades behind science fiction literature. I use it to think in terms of 3 decades only, but it's, yes, there's a huge gap. There's a huge gap. And we don't have many science fiction authors, good authors from the 80s on, translated here in Brazil. Right now, I just finished the translation of 2 books, William Gibson's Zero History and Ian MacDonald's Brazil. Ooh. And they are... and I really, I must say they are the cream of the crop here right now, but we already have many, many other good books, excellent books I would like to translate as well. I'm thinking right now as 2312 by King Stanley Robinson, among others by Joe Walton, and a plethora of other books, science fiction or mainstream or slipstream books. And apparently we must always in Brazil wait for the series, the miniseries, the movies to get ready to publish these authors, especially in science fiction's case.
Okay, so I don't want to skip over Julia because you had a question I saw earlier, so I want to make sure to get you to jump in here.
Okay, so I wanted to go back to something we were talking about earlier. So Libby kind of outlined the history of Brazilian SF, and then Fabio mentioned that he didn't really feel connected to some of the newer writers and some of the bestsellers, especially because they weren't doing the same things and they weren't part of fandom, which makes me wonder, as people who grew up in Brazil, what did you read growing up? What were your actual experiences and influences? And how has what's been out there changed, and how has fandom changed? What is fandom like there?
I guess go to, Fabio or Jacques, whichever, since you both have a hand up there.
The book that changed my life, or the first book that changed my life for the first time, because there were several books that changed my life over the years, was Dune by Frank Herbert. And I absolutely love Dune. I'm a Dune fanboy. Anything that goes out with the name Dune, I jump and grab it, because really it's awesome. So it was the first thing, but also lots of comic books, mostly X-Men. That I read when I was a kid, lots of X-Men and all the Marvel stuff, mostly the mutant, the X groups. But when I read Dune, that absolutely changed my life, not in a very profound way, because it's a book that touches on religion and ecology and politics, and it's huge, and you've got, you know, sandworms that, you know, that has a huge impact on a kid.
I guess, Fabi, did you want to jump in here?
Okay, right. Oh, speaking about books that changed my life, I must say the same thing as Jack said. I don't have only one book. I have several books along the years. But relating that thing to our concept of fandom, Julia, I would say this thing. In 1989, I read the first really life-changing and game-changing SF book for me. That was William Gibson's Neuromancer. When I read Neuromancer, something radically different, radically fresh and new opened to me. And I started telling everyone I knew here in Brazil, you must read this, you must read this book. This is awesome. And that was when I first noticed that there was something very wrong, or with me, or with the fandom, because... until then, 1989, I'm saying, we were publishing only Asimov, Clark, a few Dick, Heinlein mostly. There are huge fans of Heinlein in Brazil, Bradbury, and very few others. Frederick Brown, but in the 70s mostly. And so you have many others like Michael Moorcock, scattered books across the 60s and the 70s, and they didn't survive the 80s. So when I started to spread the Neuromancer gospel, as I said then, I was shunned out by most of the fandom who told me, "Oh, this is crap. This is a crappy book." This started. Apparently, I'm not the only one that did it, but that was already beginning a sort of schism in the Brazilian fandom, because most of the writers and the reviewers and there was no small press publishers then, unless except Gumercindo do Rocha Doria, they were all for whatever tickled her fancies when they were children. And so they weren't really interested in new things. They regarded new things as being too disruptive of the order of things. And since then, I started slowly moving out of fandom. I think today, fandom in Brazil is a very scattered, fragmented, even a broken thing. And I think that's good. Because when Jack say, "Oh, I don't feel connected," and when Caesar says, "I don't feel connected," I think that's awesome, because there is not only one fandom in Brazil anymore. That's lots of fandoms, and I think most of them communicate with each other, and but many authors don't communicate as well, and I think that's everybody have her or his space, her or his niche to publish. And I think that should be the best thing, the best way to move.
Interesting.
That's my two cents.
well, Jacques, you put your hand up, so did you want to add something to that?
Yeah. One thing I remembered, because what Fabio just described in 1989 happened with me in, I guess, 2003 or 2002, when I read Perdido Street Station, which was the book that lastly changed my life or made me want to write my own fiction. And I was spreading the gospel of Perdita Street Station, just like Fabio did with Neuromancer. And everybody, maybe, probably, except for Fabio and a few other guys, said, "Now this is crappy. Too many adjectives, and it's too long. It's about nothing." And I said, "No, you're not understanding. This is great. You got to read this." And then I got in touch with Jeff Vandermeer and Hal Duncan, all these new weird guys, and people didn't pay attention. I guess fandom is always the same, no matter when you're, what the place in time or the place on Earth, because from the talks I've been doing with other people from the U.S. and U.K., it seems that the fandom in those countries is just the same, you know?
I think fandom is, by its nature, conservative. They like a genre, they like a formula, and so it's slow to come to innovation. I've always found fandom rather frustrating as an academic. Anyway.
Very different perspective from the side of academia, yeah. Julia, maybe going where I was thinking of going, so I'll jump to you, Julia.
I may not be going where you're going. I want to just throw a counter into that fandom being conservative thing by saying that there always are different sections of fandom, and there always are vociferous arguments in fandom. And right now we're having a lot of arguments around inclusivity and intersectionality and feminism and people of color and so forth, which has resulted in the CIFWA bulletin completely revamping itself. And the most recent issue has been very well received and completely different. So I think that there are actually a lot of nuances to fandom, and that everyone also will find it frustrating. But one of the things I wanted to ask the Brazilians here is, have you noticed that there was a big change in the way Brazil interacted with the rest of the world in science fiction after the internet started to be a widespread thing that everyone had?
Yes, definitely. No yep. Question about it. And I'm mostly talking about myself. My main focus is on the American and the Anglophone market. But I've been in touch with several authors and editors for the past, I don't know, several years. But in the beginning, it was only me and Fabio. But now, I think everybody I know, everybody that I think is relevant in the speculative fiction scene in Brazil, is in touch with many people from around the world, not just the Anglophones, but also Hungary, Bulgaria, maybe China too, Argentina, what else? France, maybe. Well, we've been in touch with, we're a global community now, and that's great. That's awesome.
I think Fabio had your hand up next. Did you want to jump in?
Yes, sure. I agree with Jack, but I would say that when I started to really try my hand at English writing short stories back in 2008, I didn't have this feeling. I still thought of us Brazilians as islanders, pretty much segregated, even from Latin America. Sometimes... sure, do you want...
No, I just, that's the thing that strikes me the most, is that I've always said Brazil sort of seems to have its back to Latin America, and that's kind of really interesting. I know that Jacques' story, A Vida Atrás das Barricadas, what is the title of it?
It's
A Possible Behind the Barricades, right?
Yeah, A Life Made Possible Behind the Barricades. It came out in the... World SF2, Apex School.
And it takes place in Spain. So anyway, or Catalonia. And so that's very, to me, that's very interesting. And even Jacques, you're up in Recife, which is, you know, not the sort of Rio, São Paulo kind of access that a lot of people associate with, you know, science fiction. So I think the internet is of prime importance, and it just can't, you know, one can't say enough. And I'm curious to know what you think, Fabio, about Spanish America. Because as someone in the United States, if I talk about Brazilian science fiction, I'm pretty much just talking to myself. So I've had to branch out into Spanish America. If I want to have graduate students talk to me, the PhD here is in Spanish. So I've been brushing up on my Spanish, which I did in graduate school, and just, you know, I'm reading a lot. So I'm really curious to see what you guys have to say about that. And sorry about the fandom thing. I just know certain fans and my experience in Brazil with fans. So I don't want to say that all fans are necessarily that, but some, you know, that I've run into tend to have their likes and dislikes.
I don't want to step all over you there at all. I think that there definitely are conservative fans who can be frustrating. I just kind of wanted to point it out because actually what you're doing right now is being on a fandom podcast. The only reason this exists is because Sean is part of fandom. So
exactly,
there are so many different branches of it.
I agree though. Yeah, there are certainly fans out there who maybe get a little embedded.
I definitely think that's true, and I think that they get frustrated with people like us for wanting to change it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. We're just troublemakers.
We are trying
to make things different and trying to bring in all that weird new fiction. What are you
doing?
We're
telling them to read Neuromancer.
Right. And that's Jacques is talking about, you know, bringing those things into Brazil. And Fabio, weren't you a translator of Neuromancer? Did you do a translation of it?
Yes. I did the most recent translation because the Neuromancer had three translations. One in 1999, one in 2002 or 2003, and the other in 2008 or 2009. That was mine. The celebration of 25 years of Neuromancer, because the other two was they had several mistakes, mistranslations, and I think finally I did something good for the book. I want to think so.
Yes, you did, mate.
But just to return into getting back to that subject, Libby. That's an interesting thing about Latin America is that sometimes Silvia Moreno Garcia likes to pull my leg, telling me in front of everyone on Twitter or Facebook, "Oh, Fabio, come on, Brazil is not even part of Latin America."
Which I agree completely.
And I agree with her. I say, yes, Silvia, you're right. Because Brazil has acted very poorly regarding the rest of Latin America among the last few decades. I think that at least regarding science fiction and fantasy writers, we had to go global in order to get back to Latin America.
Yes.
Okay.
In 2008, I had virtually no contact with Latin American authors, and today, as of now, I have contacts with Argentinian writers. I'm writing a story now for an anthology, an Argentinian anthology. I have contacts with people in Uruguay, in Chile, and it's been quite refreshing because I've been wanting to have this contacts. I want to spill the beans right now about one thing that I don't know if it's common knowledge. A few years back, Jeff van der Meer invited me to his Best American Fantasy series. Because he was thinking of making the Best American Fantasy an all-inclusive American, including Latin America as well. And he invited me as a sort of assistant editor to try and chose reprints from science fiction stories from all over Latin America. And it was in 2009 or 2010. And that's what where I had I thought I was going to have fun, but it was sheer hell. Because first, that was when I had to realize that I didn't know anyone on Latin American fandom. I didn't know any writer, any new writers. And I toiled for 6 or 7 months just to tell Jeff, sorry, Jeff, I can't reach out anyone. I think I presented him 2 or 3 authors, but that was that. I was very ashamed of myself. I think Jeff was ashamed of me as well. But the project ended because of the publisher didn't want to discontinue the project anyway, regardless of this thing. But that was when I decided to make contact with other authors in Latin America. It's still an ongoing process, still going very slowly, but I think I'm getting some progress at it.
Well, I find that really interesting because when you're talking about the way in which Vandermeer, and it makes total sense if you know anything about Vandermeer's editing and publishing career, that he would want to be a sort of inclusive American. I'm currently actually teaching a class that does just that, where I'm treating American literature to be representative of the Americas. So we're covering, obviously it's one course, so not covering as much as I would love, because I can't convince these students to stay in the class for 52 weeks straight. But if I could, I would cover quite a bit more. But that's what I've been doing myself, is having a class which looks at literatures from all the Americas as just varying. I'm sort of parroting Earl Fitz's contention that that we should think about the literatures of the Americas as being more about regionalism than nationalism, per se. But, yeah.
That's very cool. Yeah, I just got invited to go up to Indiana University for a symposium on science fiction in the Americas. And so I'm doing Latin America, and another person is doing a minority science fiction in the U.S., and then someone else is doing Latino science fiction. And then Juno Diaz, a Dominican-American writer, is going to give a workshop and a talk. So I think there's everyone's on the right page. And I was going to ask Sean how he got interested in this topic. And Julia, what made you invite us? Or is it just the post-colonial, or are you doing international science fiction, you said, this for your podcasts?
Yeah. I am also an academic, although I pretend to be just a fan on this podcast, sometimes poorly. I'm actually also, I may have mentioned, but I'm also at UF in the English department. For me, I've been interested in post-colonial science fiction for a while. Mm-hmm. And then it just became, eventually I decided to start a podcast. And this year I decided, the World Cup is happening this year. So it seemed like, what a perfect year to have a year where we celebrate SF from around the world as best as we can, obviously, within limited space constraints. I currently work in Caribbean literature. Right. And part of my dissertation deals with like Nayla Hopkinson and Tobias Bacall and Karen Lord.
Sure.
It's just for me a logical stepping stone to sort of talk about work that's from elsewhere and talking about these traditions, some of which I know very little about. Like, we did a podcast on Israeli science fiction, and honestly, aside from knowing a couple authors, I didn't know very much about what it was like to be publishing or translating genre fiction in that particular world. So it was sort of a way to kind of fill in my own gaps while hopefully filling in some gaps of people that are elsewhere in the world who may be listening. But Julia, did you want to add something to that?
Well, sure. I'm always interested in finding out how people do things all over the place. That's just one thing that I find very intriguing. And I especially love that we have the internet. I'm currently an editor for a short fiction magazine called Strange Horizons, and one of our missions is to try to find work by new and interesting voices. So we're always looking for submissions from all over the world, and sometimes I see how much of a lack there is in even knowing how to get involved with people in different parts of the world, even though the internet should make that really easy, finding ways to reach out. So for me, this is a really exciting opportunity to just find out more of what's out there that I'm missing, because as someone who is here, I could just consume whatever's in front of me, which would be mostly American stuff, but I want to know what else is out there. So that's pretty much what drives me.
Right. That's so cool. I just got an article reprinted by Strange Horizons about science fiction and fantasy written by women. Cool.
Oh, awesome.
Awesome. That's wonderful. And yes, I'm also co-editing an anthology with a small press in Australia, which is one of those things that is wonderful and something that could only happen with the internet, because we have to have our editorial meetings via Skype. We're on different sides of the world. We're dealing with 12-hour time difference.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess I didn't mention why did I want to talk to you guys? Well, one, I know Fabio from the Twitters, so I mean we had many conversations on Twitter about various things, Fabio helped me in touch with folks that I didn't know. Although I did know you, Jacques, because I believe a year or two ago you may have called me out for using the term third world.
Yeah.
Yeah, and rightly. No, I mean that totally rightly, because I didn't understand at the time why that was such a problematic term, and then you actually explained it to me, and I was like, yeah, that makes total sense. So,
I hope I was not rude.
No,
because that's something that we've been fighting against, that this notion of first, second, and third world that does not exist really. And even the terms developed and developing nations, it's kind of, you know, not precise, not accurate.
Yeah, and it always leaves that question open: developing in comparison to what?
Yeah. Exactly. And what I have, what's developed in my country may not be developed in yours. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, I totally agree. But and then obviously Fabio put me in touch with Caesar, who I believe you had a hand a long time ago. Caesar, did you want to jump in and on any particular thing we sort of raised so far?
Well, no, you guys can keep going and learning. I'm listening and learning a lot.
you can keep talking. I'm just having a beer.
Yeah, well, you know. I was also called out on that by when I gave an interview to Christian Thomas. That's what, you know, he's translated an interview with me, and he asked me that, and I said I didn't mean it in any derogatory way. It's just that, you know, for 2000, when I was writing my book, that's just the term that came to mind, and so I did have to also explain myself. So anyway,
yeah, it becomes one of those things where the terms we have don't quite account for the reality of the situation, and so then we have to ask stuff. I mean, can we ever come up with a term, and should we even bother?
Right.
Yeah, because I'm not sure what we say, but I totally understand why these terms don't work. I mean, I think, Jacques, when you were talking to me, you know, you're saying like, well, the third world doesn't really apply to Brazil. I mean, what do you do with Brazil in this reference? You know, or in the case of developed, undeveloped, I think it was a specific claim in developed and undeveloped or developing. It's like, well, what does that even mean? Mm-hmm. You know, and what is being developed? And like, are we sure that our conceptions of what modernization is and industrialization, mm-hmm. right, well, with new technology, what does that even mean anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just a matter of, you know, the common parlance. That's the way people say things. And, sure. And the cool thing about internet is that I can talk to you and you can talk to me, and we can, you know, share some experiences and learn something from each other.
That's it. Yeah.
So,
great thing about the
internet. So a lot of this sounds to me like one of the things that I can think of when you say something like third world country, that's a very colonialist view. And it comes from the idea that there are these imperial powers that are the first world, right? And then the other ones are their kind of satellite countries that they've decided to take over and develop and make them civilized. And that's kind of the implicit baggage that's behind all of it. And so, yes, I think one of the things that we're all very interested in, I'm assuming, in this chat is sort of how to come at things from a post-colonialist standpoint. And I definitely want to bring this back to Fabio, because I want to know how you and Jibril got together, Jibril, to make We See a Different Frontier, and what your experience with that has been. Did you get pushback? Has it been well received? How is it for you coming from Brazil and working with someone in a different country to put out this anthology in English, which isn't the language that is spoken in your country on a day-to-day basis?
Well, this is it's a very interesting question, Julia. And for starters, it all happened, I think, a couple of years ago when Jibril published a call for editors in the Future Fire magazine, asking for two special editions of the magazine. In the beginning, at that first moment, he aimed just for publishing two special editions, web only, of the magazine. And then he asked for people to write projects detailing themes and what we would like to do regarding how would we like to do regarding distribution if it came to a change it into the book format, but it wasn't guaranteed. And both projects came to fruition and came very, very, very well. And the first was Outlaw Bodies by Laurie Selke. And it became an anthology as well. Laurie and Jibril made the project on their own. And when I wrote my project, I suggested him we could do a Kickstarter. And he said, okay, never tried this before, but we can do it. And we were quite skeptical of I don't know if we're gonna get the amount of money we need. So we started with, I think, $2,000. We are aiming at pro rates, but not many authors. And I think in 2 weeks we got, or less than two, a few, the 13 or 14 days, we got all over the 2,000. Then we asked that we didn't go for Kickstarter. That's important. We go for peer backers, because I don't know now, but then a couple of years ago, Kickstarter did not accept anyone living outside the U.S. And so he couldn't accept Jibril, who lives in the UK, and nor me, who live in I live in Brazil. So we had to do peer backers, but it was awesome anyway, because we got our first goal was $2,000, and we got almost $4,000. Awesome. Then we got everything we wanted, but there was a downside. We got more than 100 stories, because it was all call for subs. We didn't invite anyone. We really wanted to hear new voices. And we didn't get much flack. But one or two things happened regarding, let's say, without using metaphors, white male authors. That I got two emails from white males, calling my bullshit, as they said.
Oh gosh.
because who did I think I was to do such thing? But one of them called my bullshit because his story, he was writing under pseudonym and his story wasn't accepted.
Oh, of course, yeah.
I didn't even answer him, but I didn't know who he was.
Okay.
I didn't accept his story because his story wasn't a good one. That was that. And fortunately, there wasn't a shitstorm on the social medias, on Twitter nor Facebook. But there was in another author that this time a white female author saying pretty much the same thing. And when she learned that I was writing a bonus story, she scoffed at me in the webs, telling, this is too easy for him because he's getting all the advantages publishing his own story for free in the anthology as well. And I was what? I couldn't even understand what they were talking about. I decided not to answer them. It was as simple as that. And fortunately, apparently I was right, or at least I was not that wrong, because we've been getting praise from many venues, many reviewers, from Publishers Weekly to several bloggers. And three or four stories are going to be anthologized in year's best anthologies, and
two
in next Gardner Dozois anthology, year's best.
That's awesome.
And other two in another anthology. I am not at liberty at saying now. The authors asked me not to say, but I can say I'm very very happy. I couldn't be more happy. We are trying to get a panel in Long Con, in the Next World Con.
Wow, that is probably so super.
Oops, because we are going to have I am going to be there. Jibril is going to be there. Jay Yang is going to be there, and that was a total coincidence. After the book was ready, I was accepted for Clarion West last year, and so was Jay Yang, so we became classmates at Clarion West as well. And we are going to be together again at there, and also Rochita, Luen, and Rhys. And so we are probably having a mini reunion of sorts, and that's going to be okay. I'm even talking. I'm trying to convince Jibril, trying to do a second anthology, and he's all for it. We are trying to do so, but we are probably going to do it next year because we don't have time for anything right now.
Right. And this brings up the whole language barrier. I remember listening to a podcast with Gary Wolf, among others, in which they said, where's all that science fiction from Brazil? Why don't we see it? And I said, because it's in Portuguese. So this is, you know, we're all using the language of the largest colonial power, right? I mean, we all are. So, you know, this is one of the things. And, of course, you know, I have self-interest because I teach Portuguese, so I'm interested in people learning it. But we have to, you know, sort of face these legacies. And it's kind of interesting that English is kind of, you know, it has to be in English. But I'm very excited, you know, to hear about all these activities.
Yes, Libby. And that's where things get strange, because even though we are having a boom, a veritable boom in Brazilian science fiction right now, people are just getting good at writing in Portuguese now. And most of them don't even... the interesting thing is most of them are insular, are still insular. Most of them are not even interested in participating in global activities.
Right, a wide
I think it's a beginner's thing, because most of these writers are really beginners, And I think that in a couple of years of we are going to be we are going to have another boom, because several of these authors are already being invited to participate in international anthologies. So a few of them are trying their hand of at writing in English, but most of them are asking to have their stories translated. So I believe this barrier is soon to be broken, I think, in the next couple of years.
Exciting. Yeah.
Excellent. So Cesar has not said a thing in a while, so why don't I let you jump in real quick?
I am of these beginners Fabio told about. I just had my first English language short story published last year on the Rake Fantasy Quarterly. It was just my first time. I have now two other works submitted. I don't know if I'll get published. Even though I can translate my own work, it's very hard to write on your second language. So that's part of the barrier here. Like Fabio said, there's more people trying to get others to translate his own work than people translating the work himself. So that's one of the problems here. And I believe it, and I ask myself if there is really an interest of the market in the United States, because your market seems so self-contained, and you can have an answer to that. Is there an interest from the market, not specialists or academics like you guys, from the market? Is there any interest in Latin America, Brazilian science fiction and fantasy?
Well, I mean, Libby, do you want to jump in there?
Cosmo Latinos has worked very well. I've taught out of it. I taught a Latin American science fiction and fantasy in translation using Cosmos Latinos, which is an anthology of stories from Brazil. There are three Brazilian stories in it of the, 21, say. But it only took up about half the semester. So I had to fill in with translations that I had done, and that's how I got reading American science fiction written about Brazil to fill in some of these gaps. So I think there is probably more academic, and then can it cross over like some of the stories did? The one is in one of the SF, the Violet Embryos is in one of the best SF collections. David Hartwell organized, but I think you'll just have to go story by story, and it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, I think I would add that, and maybe Julia too, you could probably add to this too. I think I would say that part of the problem with translation of the desire for translation is people need to know that there's this stuff out there, and that, I hate to put it this way, but that it's worth reading. And because ultimately the publishing market outside of maybe a select few small publishers who just really like translating stuff because they love it, most of the big publishers aren't going to do it if they don't think they can sell it, and that's just a matter of survival on their part. And that has to be based on what they perceive the public to want. And I can't say, because I don't know enough about Brazilian science fiction to say whether or not there is an interest in that. I think there is in my personal. I would love like millions of books to show up in my apartment that are translated from Portuguese. That'd be lovely. But I do feel like part of the issue has to be that we have to actually expose people to this stuff. I mean, like for example, like Chinese SF right now is getting such a big push in terms of the sort of media interest, and we're now getting the first first American publisher translating a Chinese science fiction novel, the title of which and author of which I've forgotten.
It's The Three Body Problem.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And that's I was actually going to talk about this, so if I can jump in here for a sec. So I was actually thinking about that and about how The Three Body Problem is the best-selling book in Chinese SF. I think it sold 400,000 copies. It's a really big seller. And Ken Liu is translating that for Tor, but I think part of what makes that possible is having translators who are already well known and respected in English. Mm-hmm. And Ken is a person who has won in the same year the World Fantasy Nebula and Hugo Awards for one story. Wow. So he's someone whose name is kind of out there and known and respected, and then he's also fluent and a translator, so he can do that, and he can jump on board, and that is going to help sell the book, because people know his name. They're going to think, oh, Ken Liu wanted to translate this. Mm-hmm. Maybe I would like to read it. And so I think there is definitely... There's two different things here. One is getting the public to realize that there are these things and to tell us, you know, there are these things that exist in Brazilian SF and I wish you could read them, but you can't because they're not in English. And so then pique the interest. But then on the other side of that, it's also how do you get those books to sell? And that is what it's going to come down to for most publishers. And the way to get those books to sell is to find a way to make people want to read them, whether you're getting someone like Neil Gaiman to present it, like he has the Neil Gaiman Presents audiobooks, where he sort of has given his official seal to Ellen Kushner's series, which those aren't in a different language, but they're less known than Neil Gaiman. And then people see Neil Gaiman's name on it, and they might not know who Ellen Kushner is, but Neil Gaiman's name on it, so they're going to buy it.
Yeah.
And that's so there's kind of two different things going on. And one is just not knowing things exist. And another one is how to get them to be attractive. But I think that one of the things that I'm seeing a lot now is that there are a lot of smaller publishers out there and people like the Vandermeers who are trying so hard to get other voices out there. Small Beer Press is another one. And I think that those are doing a great service because they're not just getting things in front of us. They're also getting awards recognition, and I think that helps to drive it as well.
Yeah, and I would just say that from a marketing perspective, it probably really helps to have a book that you can say, this has sold 400,000 copies in China, because it immediately says, well, look at how many people bought that. Then perhaps we should like it. And I think on some level, that particular book, if it does well in the U.S., is going to facilitate a lot more translation from China, or other people speaking and writing in with Mandarin or Cantonese or whichever particular language they're writing in. But I saw, Fabio, you had a hand up. So you want to jump in and maybe take offer your take on all this?
Yes, sure. I wanted to just to add one thing. Still speaking of We See a Different Frontier, there is a very interesting datum to add to this conversation, because at least half of the authors we selected came from Asia originally. I think two from Latin America, and nobody from Brazil. And although among the people who donated to support the fundraiser, I could count three or four Brazilian fans and writers. I think I can say this here. We only had from this more than 100 stories, two stories from Brazil, which I had to turn down because one of them was very badly translated.
Aww.
And the other one didn't have anything to do with the anthology per se, thematically speaking. I think there is a lack of information from the part of the Brazilian writers. For instance, 4 or 5 years ago, I didn't know who Caesar was. I don't think Caesar knew who I was.
I was nobody.
We you, nah, Don't give me that, Caesar. For the sake of disclosure, Caesar, being a small press, and he's being a very successful small press publisher right now, I just sent him a story. He invited me to an anthology, and I was very late. I want to apologize in public here, Caesar. But I sent him a story.
You don't need to apologize.
But
I know that feeling, bro.
But no. Seriously, I think that we Brazilians are still very much separated from everything that happens abroad, and so sometimes I write almost exclusively in English these days. Not only because I happen to see myself more interested in the what John Clute calls the great conversation regarding science fiction, fantasy, or fantastica in general, but I think that there is disinformation. I spoke in English and in Portuguese about this project, and I almost didn't get any stories from Brazil, and I don't to this day I really don't know if people wasn't interested, or if they really didn't know how to approach me because they couldn't translate the stories, etc. I really don't know. That should be interesting for us to have a discussion here in Brazil about this.
Yeah.
Cesar, you put your hand up. You want to jump in?
Yep. I agree with Fabio. There's a problem with information here. I can tell my own example. I didn't know anything about the scene outside of Brazil before knowing my good friend Christopher Kastensmith, that you guys may know.
Yep.
He was a Nebula nominee a few years ago. And he lives in my town. He's American, but he lives in Brazil since 1999, I think. And he was the one that got me into writing in English, and he presented me the submission grinder, something that I had never heard about before. And now I'm a little more in touch with this universe. It's still very new to me, but I believe this is common here among the authors. There are not many authors with, I don't know, I believe there are not many authors with a great contact like Fabio and Jacques. I believe they are exceptions, not a rule.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's true because they have the English that really, you know, really helps in that sense. And doesn't Kastenschmidt also write in Portuguese?
No, he writes in English. I have translated one of his first stories published here.
Okay.
But he still writes in
Portuguese.
English.
But I know he speaks Portuguese because I think he's married to a Brazilian and has children who speak Portuguese as one of their first languages.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we are running a little over an hour, and so I don't want to keep you all from potentially going to bed. depending on what you do, and Libby, you may be showing up at the conference tomorrow.
Right. That's a fabulous thing. I am so impressed with what the graduate students have put on. It's just mind-boggling, like over 17 panels. How many are there?
Yeah, something like that. And two of the people that I know that are guests, I guess that we would call them guests of honor if it were a fan convention, but they're have a different title, Kim Stanley Robinson and Frederick Jameson.
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds really like a great conference.
Yeah. And I'm going to beg Kim Stanley Robinson to let me interview him.
Give my regards to him. I'm a big fan and friend.
I will. Excellent. All right. So on that note, I would take a moment and so folks can know where to find you all. As you may have online presences, or you may have works coming out that you'd like to let people know about. So we'll just start from left to right from my screen. We'll start with you, Jacques. So where can folks find you, and you know, what can they expect from you in terms of maybe your fiction, where they can find it?
Well, you can find me personally on the internet at via Twitter or Facebook. It's Jacques Bastia, everything together. Okay. I love to talk. I love to, you know, chat and spend my time not writing. So, but you can read my fiction. I have one that I actually find quite good, which is the one that was out in Clock's World, I think 2012, ooh, maybe, which is called Salvaging Gods. It's a story that's, I could say that it's typical me. So go there and read it. I have some other things in the Apex World SF 2 and the immersion book of steampunk, which was out in the UK. Well, I have some things out there. So just Google me and drop by for a little chat.
Excellent. All right. What about you, Caesar?
You can find me in a blog called Bazaar Pope. It's just Google my name and Bazaar Pope and you'll find me. I'm also on Facebook. I have, like I said, just one story published in English. It's called A Lonely Grave on the Hill. It's a story set in medieval Ireland, 11th century. And the next month, here in Brazil, I will publish my first novella in the same set with the same character. And that's it. I'm just a beginner.
Being a beginner is good, too. You got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah.
And Libby, what about you?
I am not on Facebook and Twitter. I'm on Facebook, but you might get very old waiting for me to answer. So please look me up on the internet and send me an email. I'm of that generation. I'm very email-oriented. And next year I have a sabbatical, and I'll be working on a new book project called Experiments in Gender and Genre, The Body in Brazilian and Mexican Science Fiction. Science fiction I see almost as what the term that Jacques used as a speculative. The whole thing about genre is kind of mixed from fantasy to horror and science fiction. Mm-hmm. So I'm using it in a wide sense. So thank you very much.
That sounds fascinating. I would love to read it.
Okay. I'm just out of curiosity, because I was looking on Amazon because I was going to try to buy your book, Libby, the Brazilian science fiction one. I don't have $750 to buy a used copy.
Such a joke that I bought out the whole stock. I have 10 more in my office, and I'll give you one.
Oh my gosh, that would be awesome, because I was literally going to buy it because I want to read it.
So if you can find my office in Dower Hall, you are welcome.
Awesome. I will. I'll send you an email and arrange your time to come meet with you. That'd be really great. Awesome. All right. And obviously, we got one last person to say goodbye to, which is Fabio. Where can folks find you, Fabio?
Oh, okay. I'm on Twitter and Facebook. My Twitter handle is Fabio Fernandez, simple, with S in the end. And right now, this week, I published a book, an academic book, but in Portuguese, called No Tempo das Telas. It would be On the Time of the Screens, about digital culture and mobile devices. But in English, I just published a short flash fiction piece in the new fanzine Sci-Gentasy, a story called The Woman Long After. Ooh. And I think you will be the first ones to going to say this. I just signed the contract. I'm going to publish two of my novelettes as a reprint, as an ebook reprint, by Upper Rubber Soul, Upper Rubber Boot Press. They will be The Remaker. That that was published in Outlaw Bodies, and The Gambiara Method, that was published in We See a Different Frontier. The Gambiara Method, as it will be published in a different version. And right now I have a half a dozen stories in the several slush piles all around.
And a painful process of waiting.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, this is great. I feel like we've only just scratched the surface. There's so much more we can talk about, but I can't keep you all here for 48 hours.
That's how these always go.
Yeah, this is true. So I want to say thank you to Julia for being my co-host on this episode.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yep. And I want to thank you, Jacques, for coming on the show and talking with us.
Thank you very much, Sean and Julia.
And thank you, the same to you, Caesar.
Well, thanks a lot. I learned a lot today.
Oh, good. I learned a bit, too. It's good. And obviously, thank you, Libby.
Oh, you're so welcome, and thank you so much, and thanks for being so patient with me. And Julia and Sean, you have wonderful projects and great insights, and I'm glad to know you're around UF.
Yeah, well, Julia isn't. She lives in Boston, but I am.
Okay.
Yeah, I am tearing up the Gator Nation with my podcast. And thank you to Fabio for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Sean. Thank you, Julia. And I hope to see you in London, Sean.
Hopefully. Yeah, we'll see if it happens. So, perfect. And on that note, I'm just going to do what I always do, which is awkward ending and scene. If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google Plus.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.
Hey everybody, welcome to the World SF Tour, our special feature throughout the year in which we're obviously celebrating World SF. There are a number of ways you could support this show, just really quick. One is you could subscribe to the show. We're on iTunes, we have the blog, all that good stuff. There's all kinds of cool stuff on the blog, too, you should check out. That's one way you could support us. You can obviously let people know about us. That's really cool when people do that, link to us and all that good stuff. And the other way is actually to go to audibletrial.com/SkiffyandFanty, sign up for a 1-month free trial membership. You get a free audiobook out of the deal. You get to try their service if you like it, to keep it, which is cool. And yeah, I mean, that's really that simple. So that helps us as much as the rest of it does. But in any case, thank you for listening. I really hope you enjoy this year, this very specially themed year. And of course, if we missed anything, which we're undoubtedly going to do, feel free to let us know. Send us an email or leave a comment or something. Maybe even on some of our discussion episodes, you let us know about some great works from a certain region that we should be talking about. So, in any case, I'll let you get to the episode, and I hope you enjoy it.